The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is That's a Laugh. For the next half hour, I'll be reading funny stories, quotes, and other anecdotes from various sources that we hope will add a few chuckles to your day. Dear, dear listeners, it's been a few months, but sports are back. For all you sports fans who have felt like the last several months seemed more like years without sports and now can't get enough of all things sports, today's show is dedicated to that very topic. R. Scott Murphy treats us to stories about baseball, soccer, and overall commitment for taking three for the team. Now, if you are not really a sports fan, not to worry. In true That's a Laugh fashion, you can enjoy the humor and feel-good qualities we strive for in all of the stories here on TAL. First, let's get onto the same playing field, no pun intended. Okay, pun totally intended. With quotes that sum up players and strategies about sports. NFL icon John Madden explains about football players. Hey, the offensive linemen are the biggest guys on the field. They're bigger than everybody else, and that's what makes them the biggest guys on the field. And NBA coach Doug Collins offers strategy in basketball. Anytime Detroit scores more than 100 points and holds the other team below 100 points, they almost always win. And now that we're all up to speed, on to our first story by R. Scott Murphy. From his book, Fun Stories Almanac, 14 Unreleased Stories, published in 2019, Chapter 9. If Babe Ruth played baseball today, what walk-up music would he use? This one has been sitting in the vault since 2011. Some of the player names and songs are a bit dated, but it's still fun to imagine what song the great Babe Ruth would choose for them to play if he came out to bat today. Singers brag about being fly and walking pimp, but Babe Ruth invented that shizzle. It used to be so that fans paid the closest attention to what shoes a baseball player wore or his particular brand of glove or bat. Sorry, Nike. Nowadays, Major League players may get the most attention for what song they choose as their walk-up music. And, in the field, closer Trevor Hoffman became as famous for entering the fray to AC/DC's Hell's Bells as he did for being the all-time saves leader. There's no doubt that he'll hear that song when he's inducted at Cooperstown. Speaking of Cooperstown, it got me wondering, what walk-up music would Babe Ruth choose if he played today? Off the top, let's give props to Jay-Z's Empire State of Mind, featuring Alicia Keys, and Frank Sinatra's theme from New York, New York, not featuring Alicia Keys. But that's too easy. Besides, they're both already in heavy rotation on the Cathedral sound system. Springsteen's Glory Days and Born to Run are a match for the Sultan of SWAT, but again, too easy. As I was pondering genres and surfing Snoop, Eminem, Toby Keith, Far East Movement's Like a G6, and Kirk Franklin's Revolution on my iTunes, it occurred to me that Sporting News ranked Ruth number one on its list of baseball's 100 greatest players. This isn't a decision whether Mo Rivera could get Babe to rock out to Metallica. It's more in the spirit of Flo Rida's Club Can't Handle Me. The Bambino would change the entire landscape of walk-up music. Record companies would pay him to use their songs. Note to A-Rod, Pujols, Jeter, and The Freak, you guys all owe me an expensive car when this starts happening to you. Every company repping an artist with a song that uses the word freak should already have Timmy's agent on speed dial. Big Boy would be goofing with Seacrest. And an excited announcer with a smile in his voice would chime in, DJ Street Cred's new album drops on Tuesday, but you can hear Babe Ruth walk up to it tonight. Travie McCoy wants to be a billionaire so freaking bad, but George Herman could do it just with music tie-ins. The charismatic roaring 20s juggernaut would be working his music mojo nonstop. Picture it. Dude limos into the park to the strains of the official Babe Ruth arrival song. There'd be a different official Babe Ruth experience licensed for every park, even spring training games. Each place would hand out its own Sultan of SWAT collectible bobblehead that would later sell for hundreds of dollars on eBay. American Idol winners would croon Babe's official coming out of the tunnel tune. The kids from Glee would get the official batting practice spirit song. And all of the A-list artists would jockey for the official home run trot anthem. There'd be a shiny sticker of Babe's smile on the artwork for all of his official songs. It would be the first thing we'd look for when downloading music or buying MB3s, renamed for Ruth and his number. There are possible Babe Ruth music tie-ins everywhere. Imagine what YouTube, Spotify, and Apple Music could do with music licensing related to number 3. Singers brag about being fly and walkin' pimp, but Babe Ruth invented that shizzle. Every play, every inning, every day would take on an official Babe Ruth song. Rihanna would be featured on dozens of them. The smart marketers would cross-promote the songs from Babe's buddy movie with The Rock and feature snippets from Babe's comedy album with Kevin Hart. Themed music from Babe's romp with the Rapskillions on Jersey Shore and Babe's best-selling video game Call of Duty, Babe's Beast Ops, would replace organ music and permeate the parks. I love me some Ruth, but I would absolutely draw the line at special kids bop compilations of songs used by Babe Ruth. Jay-Z would write an epic rap song with the Babe laughing and speaking before each chorus. Both of them can make a Yankee hat more famous than a Yankee can. But, let's be honest, Babe invented Yankee Nation. Yes, Will.i.am can channel P.T. Barnum, but Old Grip It and Rip It was making more money than President Hoover before we fully understand what that meant about our society. The next time you hear Troop 41's Do the John Wall, imagine the music the modern era missed without the man, the myth, the legend, the Bambino. Final note. Think all of this is preposterous? I'm still convinced that President George Herbert Walker Bush's name is a thinly veiled tribute to Babe. 41 was born in 24. He played baseball, and there are pictures of him with the Babe. His son W even once held an ownership stake in the Texas Rangers Major League Baseball team. Now, don't think that baseball is just about the music and endorsements. Fans and sponsors also have rather high expectations of the player's performance, which requires great focus. Another well-known great from the sport, Major League Baseball catcher Yogi Berra once said, 90% of this game is half mental. I'll just let that sink in for a moment as we transition to our next story. It is one of kids, soccer, coaches, and sharks. From R. Scott Murphy's book, Fun Stories Greatest Hits, published in 2019, Chapter 3, Good Folks, Bad Coaching. 4-year-old soccer. Sometimes in confrontational situations, you take the high road. Maybe Michelle Obama tells you to do it. Maybe it is a little voice inside your head. Alas, this is not one of those situations. Many of you may be involved in youth sports. I admit, I take that stuff way too seriously. In fact, I have a youth sports story where I behaved so badly that you may even feel sorry for me. It starts innocently enough with me teaming up with my neighbor Todd to coach a soccer team for four-year-olds. Full disclosure, I have never played soccer. I can't name international leagues. If the subject comes up, I throw around Manchester, Chelsea, and the USA Women's National Team like I know what I'm talking about. To me, soccer for four-year-olds looks like a big ball of jerseys on top of untied shoes moving around a tiny field. There isn't exactly a lot of coaching to do. It's actually fresh air daycare. The games are short. Players eat a lot of snacks, and you constantly tell them to stay hydrated. The first order of business is to stock up on juice, water, and oranges. The main challenge on game day is making sure your players know which goal is theirs and which one belongs to the other team. You don't want the dreaded own goal. To that end, we bought a plastic shark that was about 2 feet long because our team was the Sharks. We also got some Velcro strips. We were ready for our first game, or so we thought. Being the home team, we Velcroed the plastic shark to the top of the other team's goal. Suddenly, the other coach, dressed in a replica World Cup uniform, marched over and angrily pulled our shark off their net. "Hey, if that bugs you, we'll put it on our own net," I say as I walk up to him. I extended my hand for a handshake. He blows me off. "It's not going on either net," says Mister. "I'm much better than you, soccer guy." I say, "Look, they're four. One of the biggest challenges for them is remembering which goal is theirs. It will help your team, too." The dude looks at me and says, "I once got invited to try out for the random country national team." I changed the name so that a whole country wouldn't be mad at me. "Now," he says, "I have to deal with you putting a toy shark on the goal. That is bad coaching. You are obviously not a very good coach. What, are you still going to have that on the goal when they are 17-year-olds? This is four-year-old soccer. So now I go from being a carefree coach to I'd like to kick this guy's ass in less than 5 seconds. That's jarring. I grit my teeth and say in my best Clint Eastwood teeth-clenching voice, "It's going on our net," after which I walk over and put it there. This is four-year-old soccer. The dude stomps away. About 2 minutes later, he walks back with another "I'm better than you" soccer guy with a clipboard. Clipboard guy identifies himself as the league commissioner. Commish says he's very worried because it's the first game of the season and the other coach has officially filed a protest. He says the other coach and his team feel uncomfortable, and that's the worst thing that can happen in this league. Commish says there will be no use of sharks. After a rant about t-balls, rails on youth bowling lanes, and flag football, I say I'm filing an official protest. Commish crossed his arms in disapproval and said I need to have a reason to file a protest. I say, the other coach, his team's fans, and the commish have made me feel uncomfortable. So, we fill out another protest form. I ask for a copy of the form. Commish says he keeps the protest forms, and the coaches do not receive a copy. So, I whip out my cell phone and take a picture of the form. I also squeeze off one of each of them and ask how to correctly spell each of their names. It's official. One game is to be played, and there have been 2 pre-game protests and 3 camera phone pictures. This is four-year-old soccer. Commish then makes us shake hands. I ask if we need to hug as well. Commish comments he doesn't like my coaching style. I let him get about 5 seconds away before getting a little too close to the other coach and wagging my finger in his face. In my best tough guy voice, I say, "I hope your team is good. If they're not, it's going to be open season all day. We'll see who's uncomfortable and who is a bad coach." He thought for a moment and offered a lame reply. I think he said I would be a better fisherman than a coach since I have a toy shark. This is 4-year-old soccer. Full disclosure, all of this would have set me off anyway, but my 4-year-old son decided during warm-up that he didn't want people watching him. He was on the sidelines with tears in his eyes. During practice, he was scoring goals from all over the field. Get him to the real game with a few people present, and he came unglued. That's perfectly understandable for a 4-year-old, but didn't he realize we were playing for one of the most important prizes, male pride? His teammate Drew, we called him Droodle when he was 4 years old, had no such fear. With the tenacity of a World Cup pregame talk, I pulled Droodle aside and asked him to attack their goal early and often. I said I hoped he could hit double digits in goals. Their coach started yelling pretty loudly at his players. They looked confused and in need of more snacks. I started pacing and sizing up the troops like General Patton. "Watch number 4," I yelled. "He showed good speed during their warm-up." Two other fun pregame notes for your reading pleasure. There are no goalies in 4-year-old soccer, and the referee is just 10 years old. The game started. Droodle got the ball, dribble right, and boom, kicked it into their goal. We were up 1-0. The other team started the next action. Droodle stole the ball and kicked it right into the net. 2-0, baby. This is 4-year-old soccer. The other coach made early substitutions, put his hands on his hips, and kept yelling defense at the players coming off the field. It's a running clock in 4-year-old soccer. That means it doesn't stop for timeouts or balls that go out of play or anything else. They only play 12 minutes and a half. It goes by pretty quickly. Despite the quick clock, Droodle scored 10 goals in the first half. Each one was better than the last. My fist was pumping like I was at a Metallica concert. I may have even been humming the song Enter Sandman each time Droodle scored. The other team scored 0 in the first half. They didn't even get a shot on net. It was glorious. I could hear the other coach at halftime barking at his player. He made them run a lap to think about all of their mistakes from the first half. Even though Droodle was grabbing every ball and scoring, I praised my team for playing together and showing great teamwork. This is 4-year-old soccer. I pondered sitting Droodle out for a few minutes to start the second half. Then I remembered the comments about bad coaching and 17-year-olds. Then I took the high road and came to my senses. No, that's not what happened. And I know that's not what you wanted to happen either. Yes, the goal became clear. Droodle needed to score 17 goals to exact the perfect revenge for the comment about sharks and 17-year-olds. My testosterone made the call. I'm pretty sure that's how the world wars get started. Luckily, on this day, there was no Archduke Franz Ferdinand and no access to any heavy artillery. My best weapons were Droodle and my camera phone. The second half started with their best player making a move around one of our players. Then Droodle stole the ball and pounded it into their net. We were on the board again. Droodle didn't raise his hands and celebrate. He was a quiet assassin out on the field. It was his very first soccer game, and he was taking to the sport like the proverbial fish to water. Soon, Droodle was on the board again, and again, and still a couple more times. He had now reached 15 goals. We were up 15-0, baby! The brass ring of 17 goals was in sight. This is 4-year-old soccer. After a small scare, when the other team kicked a ball that sailed wide of our goal, Droodle scored his 16th goal. To add to my poor sportsmanship, I had set a timer on my watch. I yelled, 3 minutes left! We need more goals, and we need to maintain this shutout. Keep feeding Droodle. He's got the rhythm of the game today. After an almost tragic own goal, where one of our players got confused and kicked it wide of our goal, we reached soccer nirvana. Droodle grabbed that rebound and smashed it into their goal for the 17th time. I went into "We just won the freaking World Cup" mode. I whooped and screamed and slapped hands with anybody within range. I then pulled Droodle out of the game, gave him a big hug, and told him this was a moment we were both going to remember for a long time. I said I hoped his teammates could keep up the shutout. Guess what? We could! We ended up putting two more goals in the net for a final score of 19-0. As time ran out, I stood there gripping our plastic shark and shaking it at the other coach. "How do you like this protest?" I kept saying as he ignored me. He thought about it and then decided not to shake hands with me after the game. In fact, he pulled his team away. They looked confused. It was tradition that both teams worked together after the game to make a tunnel of upraised hands that each player then ran through. It was a tunnel of one team today, our team that had won 19-0. I calmed down some the rest of the season and even handled our one loss better than I did our most lopsided victory, the 19-0 game. For the betterment of the entire planet, however, that's the last season I coached any soccer, especially 4-year-old soccer. Well, kids soccer is not the only sport with more unknowns than knowns. Boxing trainer Lou Duva once said of boxing, "You can sum up this sport in two words. You never know." Very well said, Lou. This next story is a perfect example, which transcends off the playing field and into general life when sometimes you just have to take your medicine. From R. Scott Murphy's book, Fun Stories, Searching for More Cowbell, published in 2019, Chapter 16, Surprise Shots. As you read this story, how would you rate your day? The scale goes from 1, I wish a meteor would hit the earth and do a far better job than Calgon of taking me away, to 10, it just keeps raining money and I'm running out of places to put it. Irrespective of your score, think about what could immediately cut it down by at least half. I suspect going to the doctor and then getting 3 surprise shots would do the trick, right? Here's how that played out at my house. My sons are 4 years apart. Jordan, the elder one, was sick 1 week. I stayed home with him this particular day, and the best available doctor's appointment was just after the time our younger guy, Griffin, would be picked up from school. So, later in the day, off to the doctor I headed with both boys in the car. Like a majority of people, Griff really hates getting shots. Upon learning that he had to go to the doctor as part of Jordan's appointment, Griff made it clear that he was not getting shots. I pointed out that it was Jordan who was sick, and there was no reason for him to get shots. That seemed to pacify him. At the doctor's office, there is a sick area of the waiting room and a well area. Griff played with some toys in the well area and hit the Purell machine on the wall about 6 or 7 times. Jordan and I waited it out in the sick area. All 3 of us went to the exam room when the nurse said that it was time. The doctor greeted us, saw Griffin, and whispered something to the nurse. She examined Jordan and prescribed some medicine. She even gave Griff a sticker along with Jordan when the appointment seemed to be winding down. Then she said, "Griffin, I notice on your chart that you need to be protected from several different things. You want to be healthy, right?" Griffin took the bait. He agreed that he wanted to be healthy. She said she was glad to hear it because Griff needed to be better protected and they were going to help him. I knew what was coming. I looked down and hoped it was just one shot on the way. When the nurse arrived, however, It was 3 shots. Griff sprang out of his chair and tried to exit the room by crawling under the examination table, but Jordan blocked his path. Griff had expected no shots. He had been assured there were no shots. Now there were 3 shots coming his way, and it wasn't even his appointment. It took us several minutes, but we finally convinced him that getting the shots on this day was what was best for him. He worked the McDonald's drive-thru and a new video game into the deal. This kid has future sports agent written all over him. Despite the deal, he kept yelling, 1, 2, 3 shots, and it's not even my appointment. That's not fair. He was right. Life can be challenging. If your day-to-day was reasonably, but not horrifically bad, you can console yourself with the fact that at least you didn't suddenly have to get 3 unexpected shots. We now refer to the whole incident as Griff taking 3 for the team. Sure, lots of folks will take 1 for the team, but how many people will take 3 for the team? Now, that's true dedication right there. And sometimes that is the most important thing one needs to be good in a sport, or anything, at any age. SportingNews.com brings us this quote from Vince Lombardi, National Football League and coach and executive. Dictionary is the only place that success comes before work. And from National Basketball Association legend Michael Jordan, I've missed more than 9,000 shots in my career. I've lost almost 300 games. 26 times I've been trusted to take the game-winning shot and missed. I've failed over and over and over again in my life, and that's why I succeed. And BleacherReport.com reminds us of these sports fun facts. First, if all the Super Bowl's commercials and pregame shows were strung together, their running time would be equivalent to the length of Gone with the Wind, 238 minutes. And at 101, Larry Lewis ran the 100-yard dash in 17.8 seconds, setting a new world record for runners 100 years or older. We've run out of time for today's episode of That's a Laugh. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please be sure to listen next time. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. That's a Laugh is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. Are you enjoying the show? Do you have any amusing quotes or anecdotes you'd like to share? We'd love to hear from you. If you have any comments or questions about this or any other NCRS shows, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number, one more time, is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.